This is a special edition of Tax Update for Sunday, January the 8th, 2006. This tax update deals with the IRS's clarifications on Schedule D attachments reporting requirement. That clarification was made recently, and we're in the middle of this clarification coming out. But the IRS is clarifying the problem that we discussed in the podcast just before the end of 2005. This is a special edition of Tax Update. This Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. This podcast and the documents supporting it may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of either the document or the presentation. Such prohibited use would include using the podcast or document as part of a CBE presentation for which a fee is charged. This podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, which provides emailed newsletters on matters of interest to tax professionals, as well as maintaining an archive of these podcasts listed by topic. You can visit them at www.lineburgservices.com to find out about what they offer and to subscribe to their newsletters. This week, and this week's special edition, deals with the clarification on Schedule D attachments controversy. The IRS has gotten comments from a number of professional organizations and other interested parties, such as brokerage firms, regarding what were apparently the new requirements for Schedule D reporting found in this year's Schedule D instructions. The IRS on Friday sent an email, which was reported on the California Society of CPAs Tax Talk listserv, that gave some talking points or clarifying points on these instructions that may serve to give us a bit of a break for those of us who paper file returns, but still leave a number of potential problems for those returns that are e-filed and have significant number of trades reported on the return. The press has also begun to pick up on this story, which may also give us the reason why the IRS is now pushing a little bit faster to get some response out there. On the tax professionals groups on Yahoo groups, it was noted this week, an article was noted, that was being distributed to a number of newspapers that discussed this particular issue. As well, this morning in the Arizona Republic here in Phoenix, the lead story in the money section dealt with these new IRS reporting requirements, or perhaps as the IRS now views them, not new requirements, just clarified requirements. In any event, the issue does appear to be making headway and changes appear to have occurred due to the requests made by the professional organizations, as well as the inquiries made by the brokerage firms. We'll go through this in this discussion, as well as discuss the potential implications still remaining in the electronic filing agreement. On Friday, the IRS issued an email that apparently was directed at the professional organizations. This email source is Cindy Vanderpool, who is Chief of Stakeholder Relations for the National Public Liaison Office of the Internal Revenue Service. And this email came with a letter from Cindy, as well as a set of key points for the IRS regarding the Schedule D instructions that was attached to it as a clarification. In the letter, Cindy notes that in order to respond to your question, we've worked round the clock to put together a document that hopefully answers many of your concerns. That document is what we're going to discuss in this podcast. This document is for information only and not meant to be the official response, and official is in quotation marks, for those of you who submitted formal letters to Commissioner Everson or other IRS executives. Those letters will be handled in a professional manner. We handle all official correspondence. So there will be some sort of a letter back to these organizations from those they have written to. The letter goes on to state, on behalf of NPL, please accept my apologies for not providing more expeditious communique regarding Schedule B clarifications, and indicates that she is available to answer any additional questions you might have. Let's get into the document, though, which is the meat of the story that tells us what are these IRS key points and what exactly do they tell us about what we need to do during the upcoming tax season? Now, much of this I'm going to go through verbatim. However, you probably should be sure with this podcast to download the materials that are referred to in the show notes. You can find a link to those materials on the show note on the website, either the one maintained by LimeWorks Services or the website for the podcast maintained by myself at ezollers.libsyn.com. In both cases, we will have a link, if you go into the show notes, to the materials, which will include this particular letter and talking points. Now, the IRS begins with their key points by saying the IRS has received some inquiries about a revised paragraph in the 2005 Schedule D instructions. We regret any confusion related to this revision. However, investor and traders have always had the same reporting requirements, and they still do. As you may remember from the podcast last week, what we had discussed was an apparent difference between the instructions for traders on page 3 of the Schedule D instructions and the instructions for investors 3 pages later on page 6 of the instructions. The IRS is now clarifying that in fact the two groups have the same reporting requirements, and you will discover what they are going to finally clarify is use the instructions given for traders. Those are the ones you should be following. The following Q&As may be helpful, the IRS indicates, and then they go into their questions, and we'll go through these questions in this podcast. The first question, is there a new reporting requirement in Schedule D instructions? The IRS answer is no. There is a clarification. Taxpayers have always been required to provide information related to sales and exchanges on lines 1 and 8 of Schedule D. However, some taxpayers provide only summaries of these sales and exchanges or attachments that did not contain all transaction details required by Schedule D. Those of you who have been involved in the e-filing controversy just heard a few things in that sentence that may cause you concern because, as we'll get to later, with electronic filing, we still have an issue here. The IRS then goes on. The next question is, which paragraphs have been revised in the 2005 Schedule D instructions? And list those particular paragraphs from page D6. Most importantly was this particular sentence. Enter on Schedule D, lines 2 and 9, the combined totals from all your schedules D1. Do not enter see attached or summary totals from an attachment in lieu of reporting the details of each transaction directly on Schedule D or D1. Now, reading that sentence, it seems difficult to come to the conclusion that an attachment could ever have been acceptable under that sentence, since it said nothing about entering totals from an attachment that did not include all required information, but said an in-summary social media attachment with no qualifier was something not to do. As we will discover, that has been changed. Nevertheless, please notice that summary totals in general without the attachments are not going to be approved under this particular clarification. And that will be our key issue when we get to electronic filing. Why was this paragraph revised is the next question. The IRS says there was not a change in policy. It was intended to remind investors that they must include all, and all is in caps, transaction information as required in Schedule D. Some investors were submitting copies of brokerage statements that did not include all the required information, were attaching summaries, or were writing details available upon request. That last sentence suggests the problem we're going to hit with e-filing, because with e-filing, we run into the hitch of figuring out how to send the attachment. And so far, we don't have a good answer to that. We just be warned. Is there further guidance from the IRS in addition to the revised instruction? Now we get to the meat of these particular key points. Yes, taxpayers may submit attachments in lieu of completing lines 1 and 8 on Schedule D or D1 as long as the attachments contain all the required information and are in a similar format. This means investors may follow the same format required of traders. That means go to page D3 of the instructions you have just found your rules for everybody. The rules for traders are the rules for investors. Everybody must report the details of all transactions on Schedule B. Now, that makes sense because the trader's instructions tell you it's the same rule. But obviously, the investor instructions seem to imply very different. And now we're consistent. Use the D3 requirements. You have met the requirements for the form. And as we discussed last week, that clears up all the problems we had with whether or not you filed a proper return, whether the return could be deemed late filed or incomplete. What are the reporting rules for traders? There they refer you to page D3 of the 2005 instructions and refer you to the issues about being able to submit attachments. That is useful information. Again, there is your rule. The next question, which is the $64,000 question we all wondered about. Will investors face penalties if they fail to comply? The paragraph given in response to this question is a miraculous effort to talk around the issue entirely and never really give an answer to the question we have. But let's go through, nevertheless, the discussion we got. Many factors, such as facts and circumstances of the case, determine when the IRS applies a penalty. Well, that's nice. It means it won't be automatic. Generally, a tax return is accurately and timely filed with the correct amount of tax paid is not penalized. Okay, so far, so good. However, now, when I check my English language, however means to a certain extent forget what we just told you. We just told you that a return won't be penalized if it's got the correct amount of tax paid. Investors must comply with long-standing reporting requirements about each transaction. Again, so we can repeat ourselves, investors may submit attachments other than Schedule D or D1 as long as the attachments contain the required information and are in a similar format. So the point of this was not really to answer the question of whether you will be penalized if you do something other than attach a statement in the required format, but rather just to go back and say, we're not going to answer that question. You may or may not be. The way you will avoid the whole question of whether you'll be penalized is to submit a statement that has the required information is in a similar format to Schedule D1. The IRS then goes on to answer or not answer the next question. What about previously filed returns? Considering we don't know if we're going to be penalized on this year's return if we do this, it seems difficult for the IRS to answer the question about previous ones, and they don't really. The IRS notes a taxpayer may amend a tax return for the 3 previous tax years. Nice. I suppose the only good news we can take from that is it only talked about 3 years. The case we talked about last week indicated that under the regulations under 6011, it could be deemed the return was not filed. If the return was not filed, then we have a totally open statute, and 3 years wouldn't be involved. So maybe we can take some slight comfort that the IRS won't take the position the return was never filed if we're going to talk about 3 years. However, I would say it'd be dangerous to try to read that into this PR release. We would just, for the moment though, take maybe a little bit of comfort that we talked about 3 years. We will take less comfort in the fact they talked about still amending those years, which suggests that the IRS believes that if you did report summaries, you should probably amend the return and submit a 1040X. I suppose that's a solution if you e-filed and said details available on request, is to give the IRS an amended return with all of the details filed and then try to get the IRS to figure out why they just got this huge phone book of a return that has no change on it for tax purposes. But that's your issue as a preparer and something counts your client. The answer goes on to state the IRS assumes taxpayers submit accurate, timely filed tax returns. Well, kind of interesting. The IRS assumes they submit timely filed. The last time I checked, they usually didn't assume that. They checked it when they had the return. But nevertheless, we're told the IRS is presuming meaning. The burden's on you to make sure your return's been correct. Again, a tax return is accurately and timely filed. The correct amount of tax paid generally is not penalized. That may give us some breathing room in that this may be a no harm, no foul situation. Can we do much with that if the IRS asserts a penalty, even if there's no account? Probably can't do much about it if there's no tax due, but the IRS still asserts a penalty for failure to file the return and then basically reassesses the tax. I should also note that's one of the problems with this reasoning. If the IRS takes the position the return was not complete and the return was therefore not timely filed, and therefore the return has a penalty due, or the return now there was an election with return had been made on timely filed return was not made, that raises the tax on the return, then there was additional tax due. If the election was not made, the election was not made to return on timely filed, therefore now we're in a full circular situation. Hopefully the IRS will avoid that. My gut reaction is they will, but be aware that that problem does exist. The IRS answers the next question, is this revision to schedule the instructions part of a new compliance initiative? No. Taxpayers have always been required to file the transaction information. The revision was a reminder to taxpayers about existing requirements. So the IRS party line on this particular change is going to be that it has always been required to have these details, and that essentially nothing was being changed. We will see going forward if that means, though, during the exams, if agents will take that position and will look to penalize returns that did not report the details, especially if the issue of the basis of a particular asset, a basis in a particular sale, becomes an issue, where there's an assessment based on that particular transaction. Finally, the IRS covers, I believe correctly, the question of doesn't the 1099B information return cover this information? And the IRS answers this, no. The 1099B does not provide the data required as the basis of the security sold. These transaction details are required to determine the accuracy of capital gains and losses from the private taxpayer. Therefore, as it notes, the Schedule B, the 1099B, only gives the IRS what you sold it for and when you sold it. Now, it should be noted that as I've discovered, if any notices received on 1099B information, others report as well, the IRS does get transaction-by-transaction reporting of sales. So it is not as if the IRS only gets totals for the 1099B. Your front page 1099B from your brokerage may just give you a total or most summons do. But the actual reporting to the IRS has been on an item-by-item basis. So all of the trades are there. And if you've ever had the IRS had a problem with 1099B matching, you will notice that the IRS has listed every single trade on that CP notice, the CP 2000 notice that you receive. Where do we stand today? Well, this probably means for those of us who paper filed the return, or the taxpayers who paper filed, we're back to where we were a year ago, presuming that the schedules you're receiving from the brokerage or the investment advisor meet the general requirements of Schedule B1. Most do. You should review the schedule to make sure that it does report date acquired, date sold, security in question, its sales price, its basis, and gain or loss. The one thing you may run into some trouble on is from time to time I've seen reports that intermingle the short and long-term transactions and then just reported totals at the end. I think there may be problems if you have a report that says that, with the claim that that report is the equivalent of Schedule B1, which breaks short and long-term separate. I would suggest that you ask any broker to provide their report, run the short-term, run the long-term, separately so you can report each time. E-filing is a bigger problem, an especially big problem if you're in a state like California, where the state law requirements have basically made it mandatory to electronically file returns, and it seems a little ridiculous to electronically file a state return without the feds. In some cases, it's virtually impossible, and second, it seems ridiculous to try that one. If you are in a state that's mandated, then you still have a problem that the IRS appears to still be requiring you to enter all of the Schedule B data. As discussed in the last podcast, I've had concerns all along that that was the requirement for electronic filing because you could not submit with the paper signature form any attachments that were not listed as being accepted with the paper form. And the IRS has never indicated that Schedule D paper attachments have been an acceptable attachment. And I have never heard the IRS in any official capacity come near suggesting that that would be an acceptable method. In fact, as discussed in the last podcast, due to the fact the IRS seems to have trouble keeping this material together, I suspect the IRS would strongly prefer not to receive the paper documents and not to receive volumes of paper documents via that format. And last year, they started insisting on that, as you may remember, in actual releases from the e-filing group that indicated clearly you cannot send us stuff on the paper signature form that is not the very items that we asked for. Don't send extra forms. It will be interesting to see if the IRS issues a further clarification to solve the e-filing problem. E-filing is something the IRS has been in favor of. There have been pushed to increase e-filing by Congress, and now they're between a rock and a hard place. If the IRS endorses for e-filing, doing details to be provided upon request, then they are basically totally unwinding the Schedule D instructions, both as they were originally published for this year and as clarified in these talking points. If the IRS doesn't do that, then there is a huge incentive for taxpayers to paper file returns who have significant numbers of Schedule D transactions, since the alternative is to enter the voluminous data directly into the computer program, or deal with the import function, which may be more hassle than it's worth given the tax preparation software in question. I would stay tuned, because I wouldn't be surprised to see clarification from the IRS on this matter and some resolution for e-filing, but it may be interesting and it may be difficult to see how the IRS gets there. This has been the Tax Update Special Edition for January 8, 2006. A reminder that the podcast is sponsored by LineBridge Information Services. You can visit their website at www.linebridgeservices.com. Again, please verify any of this information intended before acting on it. That's especially true of this one, which has not yet even officially been published anyway, so it's tough to find anything to support it. Keep an eye on our blog that supports this podcast at newsollars.libsyn.com. If there is official IRS support for this, I will probably make a text entry on that blog, as well as make a post to those discussion groups that I frequent, in addition to this podcast. Those discussion groups generally include the Arizona Society of CPAs group that's open to their members for tax discussions, the California Society Group Tax Talk on Yahoo Group that is open to CPAs and attorneys, the Tax Professionals Groups on Yahoo Groups that is open to most tax professionals of some sort, as well as the American Bar Association's Tax Talk for Tax Lists. And their general tax list is generally open to attorneys, CPAs, and EAs who can subscribe to that mailing list. This has been Tax Update for Sunday, January 8, 2006.